89 parts debt to 1 part equity. That's not a business. That's a death sentence with paperwork. Yet in 1983, Jack Stack and 12 colleagues bought a failing factory with exactly those odds, facing a situation so desperate that bankruptcy seemed inevitable. They had no safety net, no wealthy investors, no plan B. What they did have was a radical idea. What if business wasn't some mystical realm requiring an MBA to understand, but simply a game anyone could learn to play and win? This wasn't desperation talking. It was insight born from watching traditional management fail spectacularly. Stack had seen how keeping employees in the dark created dysfunction, how withholding information bred mistrust, and how treating workers like cogs guaranteed mediocre results. So they did something audacious. They taught everyone in the company how business actually works, shared every financial detail, and gave everyone a stake in the outcome. 30 years later, that dying factory had spawned dozens of profitable businesses, created millionaires from the shop floor, and proved that when you treat people like intelligent partners rather than expendable resources, something extraordinary happens. They don't just work harder, they transform the entire game. Business is a game with rules, scores, winners, and losers. People obsess over fantasy football or poker because they understand the rules and see the scoreboard clearly. The great game of business brings that same clarity to work. Strip away the jargon and business boils down to making money and generating cash. Everything else, quality programs, customer service, safety protocols, are moves to achieve those objectives. When a warehouse manager understood that inventory accuracy directly impacted assembly line performance, his job transformed from mindless box counting to meaningful contribution. Traditional management hoards financial information, creating workplace ignorance, a fog where people make decisions blindly. When Stack told suppliers the brutal truth about inventory instead of playing games, they protected him. When he shut down an assembly line because parts weren't ready, production tripled from 100 to 300 engines daily because people finally synchronized efforts. Before anyone engages with business education, two conditions must exist. Management needs credibility, and people need fire in their eyes, that spark of pride from feeling like a winner. Walk through most companies and you'll find an epidemic of dead eyes. People going through motions, collecting paychecks, counting days until retirement. SRC's solution? Start absurdly small. They organized fishing tournaments, softball leagues, and community competitions. Employees decorated work areas during open houses. They distributed attendance plaques and branded merchandise. Critics dismiss this as adult kindergarten, but they're missing the psychology. Pride precedes ownership. Before someone takes responsibility for a $10 million budget, they need to experience winning, even if that's hitting a home run in company softball. SRC's softball team costs 42 cents per employee per hour. Their golf league, 8 cents. In return, people discuss business after hours, build cross-department relationships, and develop a winning mentality. The warehouse worker who pitched a shutout Saturday thinks like a winner Monday morning. Small victories create momentum. Momentum builds confidence, and confidence enables tackling bigger challenges, like reading balance sheets. Most business failures aren't technical, they're contextual. Assembly line workers build flawless engines while inventory costs soar. Sales teams hit targets while profit margins evaporate. Everyone's doing their job. Nobody's winning the game because they don't see how their piece fits the larger puzzle. The big picture isn't just information, it's motivation. It answers every employee's secret question: why does my work matter? SRC uses four approaches to make this connection visible. First, teach business fundamentals. During Employee Awareness Day, department heads explained how their work connects to others, concluding with a documentary about America's productivity crisis that transformed abstract concepts into urgent reality. Second, market products internally. Stack used external marketing materials inside the plant, helping workers understand the trucks they built. One worker's pride telling his child, "Your daddy built that engine," multiplies across an entire workforce. Third, rotate people. Cross-training builds empathy. Engineers who spend time on the shop floor design differently. Operators who visit customers maintain equipment differently. Finally, visualize concepts. Stock certificates transform equity from accounting entries into something people can hold and frame, making abstract financial relationships tangible and personal. The ironclad rule: the more people know about a company, the better it performs. Information should educate, not intimidate. When you share numbers and bring them alive, you transform them from weapons of control into tools of empowerment. Business should operate like an aquarium, where everyone can see what's happening, not a black box where only executives peer inside. When Billy Clinton, a warehouse manager, first arrived at SRC, he saw himself as an insignificant cog. Once he understood how warehouse accuracy impacted assembly efficiency, delivery times, and sales growth, his entire identity transformed. The biggest obstacle to open book management isn't pride, it's fear. CEOs worry competitors will exploit their data or employees will misunderstand numbers. But competitors knowing your numbers provides only temporary tactical advantage compared to the permanent strategic advantage of an educated workforce. When you hide financials, employees imagine wild scenarios, usually believing the company has far more money than it does. Numbers stripped of emotion don't lie. Every company has one critical number, the metric that most impacts survival and success. During recessions, it's usually sales. For service companies, employee retention. For leveraged businesses, like SRC, cost of goods sold. Finding your critical number isn't complicated. It's what keeps you awake at night. At SRC, the overhead absorption rate shows how much overhead gets covered when employees work directly on products. Most bonus programs fail because they're arbitrary and disconnected from employee control. SRC's 1983 program was exactly this disaster. They've since learned three crucial lessons. First, put everyone in the same boat. Every employee pursues identical goals, though payout percentages vary. Managers earn up to 18% of annual pay, others up to 13%. No separate executive bonuses or departmental competitions. Second, stick to two or three financial goals, typically pre-tax profit margins and a balance sheet metric. Third, give people chances to win early and often. SRC uses quarterly distributions with an escalating pool, 10% in Q1, 20% in Q2, 30% in Q3, and 40% in Q4, with unearned bonuses rolling over. Every Wednesday, 50 managers gather for SRC's staff meeting, the heart of the great game. They share department numbers against projections, and within 36 hours, this information cascades through follow-up sessions. The real value happens before and after. Before Wednesday, people investigate variances and prepare their stories. After, chalk talks spread through departments where teams physically write down numbers and strategize improvements. The huddle's crucial feature is consistency. Same day, same time, same place. When SRC tried biweekly meetings, chaos erupted. Estimates deviated 30-40%, departmental walls rose, and vital chatter stopped. That chatter, people using financial language in everyday conversation, signals the game has taken root. At SRC, equity sharing isn't a perk, it's philosophy. The counterintuitive insight: sharing equity creates more wealth than hoarding it. A company of owners will always outperform a company of employees because when people think like owners, they make the extra call to satisfy customers, find ways to cut costs, and obsess over quality. Sam Walton mastered this at Walmart, giving workers stock opportunities and keeping them focused on its value through in-store tickers. Critics argue employees don't appreciate stock, but only when companies fail to educate their workforce. An ESOP isn't merely an investment vehicle, it's a commitment that fundamentally changes employees' relationship to their work. When your retirement depends on company performance, you stop thinking like an employee and start thinking like an owner. SRC uses three approaches: an employee stock ownership plan owning 31% of company stock, special offerings selling shares directly to employees, and internal trading allowing direct ownership while maintaining company control. This process gets people contributing, participating, and learning. The great game of business offers a radically different vision. The people closest to the work often have the best solutions. Transparency builds trust faster than control, and when you give people both knowledge and stake in the outcome, they'll astound you with their capability. The question isn't whether your people can handle the truth about your business, it's whether you're brave enough to share it.